Well, my name is Michaela C. White. I serve as the opinions editor for the Crimson White student newspaper here at the University of Alabama. I want to welcome you to the first podcast for the opinions desk of the Crimson White this academic year, as well as the first podcast of the More Than a Month Black History Month series. Within this series, I aim to highlight any and all things Black history, but I also wanted to emphasize the areas of improvement, as well as misfortunes here at the University of Alabama and within the greater Tuscaloosa community. Black history is rich and filled with death. Some of the death relies on ongoing challenges within the Black community and areas of noticeable improvement. The theme, More Than a Month, aims to promote engagement within Black history and current Black successes and struggles year-round, rather than just the month of February. Today's episode aims to do just that as we discuss the topics of being Black here at the University of Alabama, which is a PWI, predominantly white institution, specifically higher education. I have my mentor, instructor within the political science department here at the University of Alabama, and a current doctoral student, Cameron Blackmore. She obtained her Bachelor's of Arts in Political Science from Southeastern Louisiana University and her Master's of Public Administration from Southern University Baton Rouge.
My HBCU.
Period. Cameron has conducted research on the impact of judicial policymaking within the field of education, which she presented at the 2016 Southern Political Science Annual Meeting. This spring, she will be presenting an extended version of the research at the Midwest Political Science Annual Meeting. Cameron is an American Political Science Association Minority Fellow, as well as a Southern Regional Education Board Doctoral Scholar. That's a mouthful. In her free time, she enjoys shopping, traveling to new places, and serving her community through her esteemed sorority, Delta Sigma Theta Sorority, Incorporated. So let's jump right into it with the first question so we can pick the mind of Miss Cameron Blackmore. So the first question is centered around, what were your expectations entering the field of academia? What did you expect to feel? How did you expect that environment to be inclusive to you?
So honestly, I can say that when I started my matriculation here at the University of Alabama, I really did not know what to expect as a first generation college student, and definitely as a first generation doctoral student. Mm-hmm. I pretty much had to learn as I went along. And so I realized that pursuing a PhD meant that you're not doing school as school taught you to do school. You're not just sitting in the classroom. You're required to conduct research, have your research projects on the side, present at conferences, publish, all of these things that to me seemed over my head. Mm-hmm. So I can't say that I came in to this environment having expectations from UA, but definitely as I've been matriculating through this program as a student here, I've definitely developed some expectations. You know, I expect to be treated as an equal, mm-hmm. as a colleague that is knowledgeable and capable of doing the work that I set out to do, the research that I set out to do. Mm-hmm. I want people to respect me as an up-and-coming scholar, as well as respecting my research. And I can say that the university has definitely instituted some things that have created the environment for us to grow as graduate students making a transition into academia as scholars, such as the grad school always has like a publishing in residence seminar, or it's the seminar, and then they have like one-on-one sessions with editor George Thompson. He comes in and he gives us great feedback on our research and shows us how we can turn our projects into books or into other things that can be published. But I just feel like the university has a long way to go in creating the type of environment that is truly inclusive and equal for all students. Because, you know, at my experience here and some of the experiences that I've heard amongst the graduate student population and even the undergraduate student population, being in an environment such as the University of Alabama can be very isolating to a Black student or any student that is viewed as the other, you know, any student from any type of marginalized population. And so I do feel that the university has some work to do in that area.
Right. And just, you know, some background information in regards to the University of Alabama. I am an undergraduate student here in the political science department, so which is where I met Cameron, since she teaches in that same department. I will say that where we're coming from with this is that we have around 10% of the Black undergraduate student population being African American or Black, whichever way you want to put it. Graduate student is probably a smaller percentage than that. I know nursing school doesn't have pretty much, their percentage is probably lower than that, and law school is probably even smaller than that. So we're definitely coming from a place of being in an environment where you're surprised to walk in a room and see someone, just at least one other Black person, opposed to my white counterparts that see, you know, a representation of themselves in all areas of campus. So kind of channeling into that, do you feel like in those ways where you said that the university needs to make improvement, do you feel like some improvement has been made? Because you have been at the university for going on how many years now?
No, girl. Do I have to say I've been here a long, long time?
And then you share, on top of being here for a good amount of time, you have a unique experience because you're not only a doctoral candidate, so you're a student here, but you're also an instructor in the political science department. Yes. So you see both sides of the university. So in what areas do you feel like, even on the student perspective as well as being an instructor, has there been some form of improvement within the duration of time that you've been at the University of Alabama?
I will speak on my student experience. I can honestly say that there have been some movement towards improvement. For example, I've been able to have the Dean of College of Arts and Sciences, Dean Lisa Dorr, shout outs to her. Before the pandemic, the actual lockdown part, she would have round tables, you know, where we can come and get to know her and just tell her about our experiences within the College of Arts and Sciences, you know. And so I think in a lot of ways, the university probably doesn't even know how to move towards creating a more inclusive experience for Black students. And I'm speaking in particular to graduate students. I do know that they have the Office of Diversity, Equity, Inclusion. However, I always felt like that office focused more towards undergrad students. I don't really see where graduate students fit into the fabric of that department. That office. And also to note, in particular with the graduate student focus, there's the grad school and then every college that
within the grad school, right?
Right. And so you have a college like Arts and Sciences that was actually making an effort to talk with students from marginalized populations. But then on the flip side of that, you wonder, what are other colleges and other schools in the university actually doing to reach the marginalized graduate students? So I feel as though there should be something, you know, across the board. The grad school does have Tied Together, which is a mentoring program. It gives you a faculty mentor, a peer mentor, and then there's the mentee. So you have a relationship of three. I was in that program. I was both a mentee and a mentor. So that's a great program. It's very great. The only problem is only certain students. I think the cap is like 20 students. I could be wrong, but it's not a lot of students.
Right.
So I feel as though the colleges, at the college level, there should be more of an effort to actually gauge the student population within the college to see, hey, what type of experience are you having in your department? Do you feel supported?
Exactly, right.
Do you feel that people are listening to you? Do you feel included? Do you feel isolated? Mm-hmm. You know, how can we help you have a better experience here? And I think that that would help greatly with the retention of like grad students from marginalized community, because I know a few that have left the university because they didn't feel supported.
Mm-hmm. And I know that for sure on the undergraduate level as well. But you did mention a topic about the Division of Diversity, Equity, and Inclusion here. And I would say, upon the creation of the office, I was very hopeful. You know, for me, that was a step forward for the university to acknowledge that we needed an overarching office for minority students, and even more specifically, just solely one for Black students, faculty, and staff, to be honest with you. People in color and Black are two different experiences as well. You know, being Black, yes. And also, you know, that's completely separate. Exactly, especially at a school that has so much rich history of treating Black people as inferior. Mm-hmm. Seeing that office created, it was a step forward. But now seeing that the office has remained stagnant, it seems as if we're taking steps back. Because now it's like we have an office that we can call on to go to, but it's not effective. And I remember last semester, I got some pushback from it, but I definitely did mention some flaws that I noticed within the Division of Diversity, Equity, and Inclusion. And this kind of furthers that conversation is, sure, you're making some steps on the undergraduate level, but what about grad students? You know, what about your faculty? You know, what about your staff members? What about your nursing school? What about your law school? It's just having one person within an office, or even having a team of 10 is not enough to cover all of the possible scenarios, challenges that come with not even just, if you're saying, an Office of Diversity, Equity, and Inclusion, you're including all marginalized identities, not even just the Black experience. Yes. So if we're just talking about the Black experience and we're not satisfied from that office, imagine how other identities are being, you know, treated in that department, as well as just in different spaces on campus, like I said, in the different colleges or, you know, different programs that you might be in.
Yes.
So that's definitely an area of improvement that we would both like to see from the university. Now, stemming kind of into the second question, a couple of days ago, directing back into your role as an instructor here, because I do want to get more into that one. This is not really an area that's really talked about a lot on campus. Mm-hmm. We're talking about your presence in the classroom with students. So you're teaching political science course this semester. You made a statement that you don't feel as though the students are as receptive to your role of an instructor in the classroom as they would be if they saw a white instructor.
Yes.
Or even an instructor of a completely different race in general.
Yes. I reached that conclusion from my student evaluations.
Okay.
The last time I taught, I haven't taught in a couple of years because I had a fellowship that allowed me to just focus on my dissertation, but the last time I taught, I had an evaluation, and I taught it was a research methods course, and I had an evaluation. A student made a comment about me being racist and only calling on Black students in my course, and made a bunch of other comments too, but that was pretty much the takeaway. And that pretty much showed me that, and this isn't based off of this one student, of course, this is just an example that I'm giving you, but it pretty much does illustrate that I am being perceived differently, and I'm being weighed heavily off the fact that alone I'm a Black woman in a classroom. In any given time, I have 60 students in my section pre-COVID, and I would probably have only a handful of Black students, like five students. Don't have an attendance policy, so those five students ain't showing up for every class. So I'm just painting a picture that is virtually impossible for me to have a course and have some type of discussion or lecture that moves from one topic to the next, only relying on my Black students to respond. So that wasn't true. But it did show me that my students are perceiving me and judging me based off of what I present to them in my race and in my sex. And to get back to your question, I definitely feel as though when I step into a classroom, because I know that a lot of my white students have probably never had a Black educator teaching them before ever in life. So when I step into my classroom, I do feel a level of responsibility to make sure that I am presenting my best foot. And that is in the way I carry myself. Of course, I'm going to always make sure I know my content. I'm always make sure I know my own material and things, but be able to relate those and make them relatable for everybody, not just for only a select group of students. So I do feel like as a Black instructor, I have to be 10 times better. Right. You know, whenever I step into the classroom, I cannot carry myself like my white counterparts do and get away with still thinking that my white students are going to perceive me to be knowledgeable enough to teach them. Meaning, I can't show up to class in gym shorts, in a t-shirt or sweatshirts and leggings or Uggs or anything like that. You know, I always make sure I'm putting my professional foot forward, and I've always carried myself like that in my department. And I just think that, for one, that was how I was raised to be. Both my mom and my dad raised me to carry myself a certain type of way.
Right.
You know, and it's their respectability politics that we know about. You know, they get it from my grandparents, you know, where they make sure you have nice clothes, and they make sure that you're carrying yourself a certain way so that you can be treated a certain type of way. And it's definitely something that I bring into my classroom. Not necessarily that I want to show up in gym shorts or t-shirts and sweatshirt, because that's just not me. Like I said, I wasn't raised that way.
Right.
But I know that if I showed up how some of my white counterparts showed up to teach their courses, my evaluations would definitely reflect that. And students would not trust me as much to educate them as they probably do their white instructors that show up.
You mentioned before the kind of the lack of students, how they perceive you in the classroom in terms of representation. Do you feel like that directly ties into the lack of representation of Black professors in higher education, in collegiate spaces, or more specifically here at the University of Alabama?
Oh, yes. It's not easy to be a Black faculty member, a Black instructor, in spaces such as the University of Alabama. So student evaluations definitely play a part, especially if you're on a tenure track. It plays a small percentage, but it still plays a percentage nonetheless, you know, into whether or not you're going to be granted tenure. And so when you're a Black woman, and I know this specifically about Black women, because I'm a Black woman, there is documented evidence in the literature that states that your student evaluations off the rip are going to already be lower as compared to your white counterparts, or even your Black male counterparts, you know, just given that given that imagery that people already have about Black women.
Exactly.
So these aren't easy spaces to work in. These aren't easy spaces to be a Black person and to be an educated Black person working towards a PhD or having a PhD. These aren't easy spaces for us to be in, because we are fighting the normal fight, which is making sure we're being productive, our classes are on point, we're getting our research done, we're publishing. But then there's also another fight that we're fighting, and that is the fight to prove that we are worthy and valuable in these spaces. And those fights, because there are two fights.
Right.
So my white counterparts are fighting the first fight with me, because we're all trying to produce and publish and present at conferences and make connections and all of those things that go into it. But then the other fight that they don't have, that I have, is proving that I'm worthy enough to be here, that I'm not your typical, or what they perceive to be your typical Black woman.
Exactly. Right. And thinking of that, do you feel like it's a slap in the face that your white counterparts, they earn their degrees, and that's their certificate to say that I earn the respect to be in this space? While Black women, we already face the challenges to even obtain that degree in the first place, just to have that degree and still not be respected in the space of academia, you know, just being a faculty member, and then on top of actually having to come to a class and demand that respect from your students. You feel like that's a direct slap in the face?
Yes. You know, and I often wonder, because, you know, I've had students misdirect me or misaddress me, rather. I've had students call me before, I guess, they've seen me. I've had students email me Mr. Blackmore. I've had students make the mistake of referring to me as Dr. Blackmore. Mm-hmm. But then I've also had students refer to me by my first name, and, you know, so I often wonder, when I actually do have a PhD, will they address me as I deserve to be addressed, as I earned the right to be addressed. You know, that's definitely always a question in the back of my mind, mm-hmm. you know, and I've read through some ratings on ratemyprofessor.com of some black professors, that I know. And I've realized that they were judged off of just like frivolous stuff, you yeah. know, just frivolous reasons. And she did this one thing and I don't like her. And, you know, it often made me wonder, like, dang, is this what we signed up for, mm-hmm. you know, to do this type of work? And the answer is yes. It's not that that's not a rhetorical question. Right. The answer is yes. We yeah. sign up to have ourselves judged more harshly, you know, by students fresh out of high school, mm-hmm. you know, when you've been in school, you know, 15 plus years working towards a degree and producing research.
This is true. And I think it directly ties into the fact that you're not white, you know, and that's what it comes down to. It's okay, so my professor's not white, but how can I in some way nitpick the parts of them that definitely show me, even beyond their skin color, that, wait, they're not who I'm used to seeing in the classroom, which is either white men or white women, you know? So it directly relates into that. But this also flows into my second question of, do you feel like when you are expressing your grievances of your experiences here on campus or just in the field of academia, as well as you're just mentioning areas within higher education that need to change in general, do you feel like you're occupying the role of being a typical antagonist?
Absolutely. Absolutely. You know, I've had experiences as I matriculated through my program, and I came to UA from a career. Mm-hmm. I came to UA working for a Fortune 500 company before I came here. I had a master's degree when I got here. So I already had been a career woman full time, 40 hours a week and mm-hmm. things of that nature. And so what that taught me was to be a problem solver, to advocate for myself. It definitely taught me how to carry myself, not to mention, you know, having an HBCU background that really gives you a certain type of confidence that you belong in a higher education space.
Right.
And then before that, I went to a PWI for my bachelor's degree, mm-hmm. you know, so I had experience with that. And then outside of all of that, you know, I grew up in Baton Rouge. So I definitely knew how to, you know, conduct myself. And I've definitely learned over the years how to advocate for myself and speak up for myself. And I have self-respect. So, and I know how to give people respect. And right. so I expect that in return. And oftentimes when I find myself in situations at UA where I have to advocate for myself, I know I'm coming across as the antagonist. I'm the villain in the story. Right, exactly. You know, I'm being perceived as someone that needs to be controlled, someone that needs to be maintained, someone that
looked
needs
after,
to be,
right.
yes, someone that needs to be taken down a notch. Mm-hmm. I definitely know. And when in actuality, my soul is just crying out, help me. I'm mm-hmm. trying to get through this.
Exactly.
I want support. You know, my spirit and, you know, everything in me is just really wanting to put my best foot forward. So give me the space and give me the opportunity to do that. But in actuality, what I end up coming against is, oh, she's combative and, you know, she needs to be controlled. And I feel oftentimes that's the way that I'm treated in. And I can honestly say that, make no mistakes about it, you know, because I was taught from a small age how to, you know, stick up for myself. My mama was a stay-at-home mama, but my daddy was a cop. Mm-hmm. So I know how to, you know, like take up for myself, defend right. myself, speak up for myself. It was definitely, I grew up in a household where there was definitely a requirement of myself. And so whenever I'm doing that, in my mind, I'm being taught I'm doing what my parents taught me to do. It's so natural to me. But other people perceive it as, oh, if she got her nerve, you know, oh, she's so combative.
Exactly.
Oh, she got an attitude. Oh, she this. When in actuality, my soul, like I said, my soul is screaming, support me, help me, teach me, you know, get me through this process. You know, and that question is very personal to me because I've had that, so many encounters with it.
Right.
And I know I'm being perceived as the bad guy in the story. And you often wonder, as a Black woman, who has paid the cost to be here in multiple ways, where do you go? What do you do with that? How do you navigate that? And it's something that I'm having to learn how to navigate because, to be quite honest, I'm not changing who I am. You know, I'm not changing the person that my parents raised me to be. You know, my parents raised me to, you better stick up for yourself. You better speak up, you know. And so that's what I'm going to do.
Exactly. And I would say, just a follow-up question. So you're going to an HBCU for grad school and then coming to PWI. What do you have to say to the people that tell you, or rather tell us as Black people, especially Black women, that we shouldn't be in this space to begin with? You know, what do you tell them that say that we should just go to an HBCU so we can avoid these issues?
So what I will say is, because I've been to both, there's definitely pros and cons to both, you know, and I always lead with that. Anytime I get this question a lot, I always lead with that. There are definitely pros and cons to both. But the reality of the situation is you have to do what's best for you. You know, if you're in the space that you chose to be in, regardless of whether it's the PWI or HBCU, you're there because for whatever reason you felt like that was the best space for you. So whatever that space is, you need to put your best foot forward. And like I was saying, there are pros and cons to both. Well, at my HBCU, I didn't have to worry about community. I had community with faculty. I had community with other students. You know, I had community with members of the community because I'm from Baton Rouge and the Southern is in Baton Rouge, you know. But making the transition from UA kind of woke me up a little bit because even my PWI in undergrad was a bit different, you know, like, I don't ever recall being in undergrad and feeling as though I was the other because I always had my Black friends and I only hung with Black people in my undergraduate experience. All of my friends were Black. And to take it a step further, when I was in undergrad, all of my friend group outside of the school went to Southern. Gotcha. You know, which is the HBCU. So, you know, I always had community. So UA was the first experience where I had to work for community. When I first made it here, it was easy because my little sister went here. I love you, Candace. So I was a part of her community. You know, okay. We would work together and, you know, she was my community. But when she left, I realized I really have to work even harder for a community because I had worked for a community like with Black grad students, but I had to work even harder when she left. So what I would say to answer your question, just everyone needs to do what's best for them. But if you are in a white space, like, it is important for you to have community with people that look like you and people that understand what your struggles are.
Exactly.
You know, so I'm not going to just say get on a white campus and only hang with Black students, you know, or Black people. That's great. But you also need to interact with people just in general that understand what it is you're going through. And I feel like that's easier to do at a HBCU because you're around people that you don't have to explain your struggles to. But at UA, or a school like UA, you have to put forth a little bit more effort to do that.
Right. And as an undergraduate student, I can say, I mean, we have confidently over 30,000 undergraduate students alone on this campus. So though you might meet other Black students, the Black experience is still not monolithic, which makes it so isolating and lonely because you meet another Black student, they're in the College of Engineering. I'm in the College of Arts and Sciences. We're in two different disciplines, you know?
Yes.
So now you have to go find that comfort space within your passion and your discipline and the reason why you're here to study to begin with, on top of, you know what I'm saying, wanting to find other areas on campus that you actively want to be involved with that align with your interests. So it's just, honest with you, it really dependent on what college you're in. Like you mentioned before, College of Arts and Sciences in some ways is a lot more progressive than the College of Engineering. Or yes. Even, you know, we talk about Culver House, you know, that which yes. is our College of Business here at the University of Alabama. It's far, far from progressive, you know, and in so many different respects, and it's far from diverse as well. And a lot of those professors in the STEM fields and in business are mostly white, you know, yes. which kind of leads into my next question, this fear of even speaking up about their grievances. And it's so hard for me to even find professors to are willing to, like, you know, like mm-hmm. you are, to talk about this, because it's yeah. the fear of not being tenured or even losing yeah. all of that work that you put towards being tenured in the first,
yeah.
you know, in the first place. So for me, it's, in what ways, how can the University of Alabama specifically, just bringing it back home here to mm-hmm. Tuscaloosa, yeah. how can we not, how can they not only hire Black faculty, but also retain and support Black faculty?
Yes, first of all, they have to want to do it. Mm-hmm. You know, they have to want to attract Black faculty and staff. And I think one of the things that's being pushed now is bringing on more postdocs from marginalized communities. Mm-hmm. So you might not get all Black postdocs, but right. you might still have a few sprinkled in there. But even beyond hiring Black faculty, once the Black faculty are actually on campus, they have to listen to what the Black faculty are saying and protect them mm-hmm. because retaliation is real, mm-hmm. you know, and we know that in these spaces, people maintaining the status quo is definitely something that I feel as though UA has a major problem with. There is this tendency to lean towards maintaining a status quo, and in order to break that status quo, you have to go beyond just hiring Black faculty. Once they're here, you need to support them. You need to listen exactly. to them. You need to make sure that they have a mentor that can help them, a healthy mentor mm-hmm. that can help them through the tenure process. Mm-hmm. Somebody that actually wants to see them succeed. Mm-hmm. Or you have to be that person that actually wants to see them succeed. Mm-hmm. So I'm going to start with the university actually has to want to do it. Mm-hmm. And how you show you want to do it, you create the space for it. You make a safe space for Black faculty to say, hey, I have this grievance. I can speak out and not feel as though you're going to be retaliated against or mistreated or abused or pushed out because you decide to challenge the status quo. Because what I see around this university a lot is people maintaining the status quo mm-hmm. and not many people wanting to step outside of that to fight it because they're scared of retaliation. And I understand it because when you decide to take a job at a university such as the University of Alabama, you're putting your livelihood on the line, you know? Yeah,
especially as a, you know, a Black individual. And I would say, like, I'm in a class right now just discussing a lot of Black literature. And one thing that, you know, I kind of put together while I was reading, we're reading The Souls of Black Folk.
Yes, which you, one of your favorite books. Yes.
Du Bois talks about double consciousness.
Ooh, girl.
And I often think about just the Black experience mm-hmm. at a PWI in general. And it's a different level of Black mm-hmm. of double consciousness. It's, do you want to choose between being conscious about your race and mm-hmm. being in this white space and walking with pride, especially at the University of Alabama, all the history, enslaved Black individuals, mm-hmm. not slaves, but enslaved Black
yes,
individuals.
Faded. That's important.
Built this campus. You know what I'm saying? So mm-hmm. I want to walk with pride, but I also want to walk with intentionality because yes. at the end of the day, we weren't supposed to be here. Mm. So it's, you have that battle or you have that battle of wanting to kind of be a revolutionary press, really just, I want to be heard and seen, like you mentioned before.
Yes.
Or do you just walk the straight and narrow, make sure you get your grades, you get your, you know, you stack your resume and you go about your business so that you don't receive any retaliation. It's like, you have to choose between the two. Now that we're speaking about identities, I'll move into the next or the last question, mm-hmm. Which is kind of tackling another identity that we touched on a little bit. You're not only Black, but you are a Black woman.
Yes, I am a Black woman. Black Girl Magic.
Okay, has been quoted multiple times as one of the most disrespected people in America.
Okay, now the next.
So, do you feel like you have to defend yourself away from the narrative of this angry Black woman? Like, that is one of the first things that people see when they see a Black woman that has had to build confidence in a world that has tried everything to put her down, and also to have confidence in a space where you don't see yourself a lot. You know, do you feel like you have to combat that negative perception of Black women when it really is just confidence?
Ooh, Michaela, why is you ain't preaching? I mean, you know, that connects with the typical antagonist question that you asked me. You know, like, yes, that Black woman, as soon as you challenge that status quo, or as soon as you speak up for what you know you're experiencing, but you're being gaslighted to believe that you're not experiencing, as soon as you give pushback, yes, I do feel like you're automatically attached that angry Black woman label.
Yes.
I definitely do believe, I will sit on this podcast and state this for whomever from the university is going to listen to this. I do believe that label has been attached to me, you know, when in actuality, all I'm doing is advocating for myself and sticking up for myself. And yes, I have gained a lot of confidence since I've been here at the University of Alabama, just because I've worked hard to be here, you know, and I know that I'm supposed to be here, and I know that I'm supposed to graduate from this school with a PhD in hand, period, you know. So, you know, saying all of that, a lot of people, you know, when you said that Black people are not a monolith, so many times we're treated that way. So that means that people, other people already have their preconceived notions of how
we carry ourselves.
Yes, how I'm supposed to show up as a Black woman. And so I feel as though I haven't shown up that way. You know, I have both parents in my life. You know, my parents took real good care of me. I've lived a great, comfortable life. You know, and the way that I carry myself and the ways in which I've shown that I'm supposed to be here, I've always put my best foot forward. I've always worked hard. So that is all cool and gravy. But then I hit a roadblock and I want to address it, and all of a sudden I'm an angry Black woman. So I'm no longer your pet. I'm no longer your token Black woman. I'm now an angry Black woman who must be controlled. And I cannot state how dangerous that is when you're a Black woman and you find yourself in that position to where you have that angry Black woman label attached to you, and people are now coming at you and perceiving you that way and treating you that way. I cannot state how deep it is. You know, you feel as though, I heard the term spirit murdering not too long ago, and that's exactly what you feel like. Your spirit is being murdered because people are trying to attach another identity to you that you were never born to carry. I'm not angry. I live a great life. I have great family and great friends and great mentees. You know, I have great people in my life. You know, I have every reason to, you know, be happy about the person I am and to praise God for bringing me this far. But I feel like people don't see that when it's time to look out for me.
This is true.
That puts us in dangerous situations. I can't stress it enough.
Sure. I mean, I can definitely relate to that. I mean, doing this job and talking about issues that the Crimson White has never even taken the time to address, especially issues that, you know, are deemed, you know, unmentionable.
Yes, and I'm so proud of you, Michaela. Say it enough. I want to say it on air. I'm very proud of you for
doing
it.
Thank you. And like, just like these taboo conversations, it's Yes, but at times you have to reclaim that. And that's something that I've realized. You know what I'm saying? That, sure, I mean, you want to label me an angry black woman, just make sure that you know that what I'm angry about. I'm angry about the injustices on campus. That's it. That's it. I'm not necessarily angry about anything else but the ways in which I have to fight so and hard that's so to be great. Heard.
You know, can we be clear about why I'm angry? Because you're mistreating me? Because you're trying to bully me? Because you're gaslighting me? Because you're holding up my progress? Exactly. Can we be clear about those things? But no.
Which you have the right to be angry about. Right.
Girl, you know, and people don't understand how much I've sacrificed. I've sacrificed a lot to be here. And money is just only the tip of the iceberg. I'm not worried about the money. My time, relationships, you know, I lost my sister.
The work that you put into it.
Yes, I lost my sister back in August. Mm-hmm. And one of the things, she was my younger sister, and one of the things that I realized when I traveled back to Louisiana, you know, to celebrate her life and to honor her and to bury her and to, you know, look after my dad, one of the things that I realized was that I have put so much time and effort into this dissertation, into my research, into my coursework, that I was not cultivating the type of relationships that I should have been cultivating with my family, you know. And I do feel as though my family has suffered a lot, you know, in terms of me being there for them, the ability to be there for them, because it's exhausting.
It is. And that, and that kind of ties into the, like, the, you know, the closing remarks that we had, is that the stress of being black on a PWI, first and foremost, is not just felt at the University of Alabama. It is all PWIs, especially the prestigious ones. I've heard horror stories at Harvard and Yale and all of these, you know, these high, you know, esteemed, predominantly white institutions, you know. So this goes anywhere. But these stressors are not just directly tied to feelings, but also in terms of stress of your body, stress of your mental health.
Oh my gosh. You
stress
know,
of your self-esteem. Like, that's a difficult thing to say. Like you were saying with your family, it demands so much out of you, more than it does our white counterparts. I worry, you know, for the black community.
You know, let me say this, you know, because this was something that I said I was going to share after I finished, you know, defending my dissertation and I was done with the process. But, you know, I feel like God is just leading me to say it now, because, and I'm going to share this with my family and friends, so they going to listen to it and they going to hear that last semester, me losing my sister and then having to come back on campus and face dissertation issues, that took the wind out of me. I'm talking about, I lost weight. You know, I'm little. Y'all can't see me,
but I'm
very small. I'm very tiny, and I lost even more weight. I wasn't eating. I wasn't taking care of myself. You know, and I had visible signs of stress in my body. I was losing hair, and I had to, like, get to the place where I had to get back to Cameron, because I had just got lost with everything and I had to get back to myself, you know. But buried underneath all of that, the reason why it was so rough on me is because of this very conversation that we're having. You know, people feeling threatened by my presence because I was coming and presenting myself in a way that they weren't familiar with. Exactly. And instead of sitting me down and saying, Cameron, what is going on? Are you okay? What is it that you need? I feel as though I was punished, you know? And so I had to make a decision. Either it's going to be this or it's going to be Cameron. And I choose Cameron. I'm going to always choose myself, you know. And I had to get back to that. And I feel as though for black women, because black people in general, I can extend this to the entire community, because we come from communities where, you know, we have to be 10 times better.
Yeah.
And we have parents that have worked so hard. We have grandparents that have worked so hard. And then you could trace our lineage back to those of us that are descendants of slaves, to where our ancestors were enslaved and, you know, they worked from day in, day out with no breaks and you know, under brutal conditions and things of this nature. So it's really embedded into our psyche that we just have to perform. And one of the things that my mentor, you know, kept preaching to me is self-care. Cameron, are you taking care of yourself? Cameron, are you eating? Cameron, are you drinking water? And those seem basic, but those are the things that I had to get back to. Like, drink your water. Eat a meal. Mm-hmm. Watch Netflix. It's okay. The work is going to be there. Get a good night's rest. Exactly. You know, these are things that is so important for us as Black people to maintain, because we have to make sure that we are able to show up mm-hmm. and fight these battles. And they're going to be there. And that's the one thing that I kind of, you know, wanted to close with. Honey, regardless of whether you at a HBCU, a PWI, or if you at a community college working on your associates, we live in a white society, and we're going to have to face that at some point. I feel that the Black students here definitely feel isolated. I can only imagine... Mm-hmm. Because I'm a Black doctoral student, right. And it can get very isolated. And I think one of the things that helped me not to be so isolated, and I need to shout out this organization, but the African American Graduate Student Association mm-hmm. definitely hopped in these past few years and made it a strong effort to create community again for Black graduate students, because it is so isolating and because it is so hard to say, oh, you're in engineering, whatever engineering program you're in, and I'm in political science and she's in English and he's in higher ed. Like, how do we connect when you're so busy working on your research and coursework and things of that nature? So I do want to close for myself and say how important and stress that if you are a Black student that's listening to this at the University of Alabama, don't try to do this alone. You know, there are people on this campus that look like you, that have your best interest at heart. Even those that don't necessarily look like us still mm-hmm. have your best interest at heart.
And there are some. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, you have to find those people and connect with those people and mm-hmm. stay connected with those people, because when push comes to shove, and push will come to shove,
it always does.
You got to have somebody that's going to ride for you. Yeah. And that was kind of Baton Rouge, that ride for you, but...
I'm sorry. You know, I have to commend. I can't even, you know, finish this podcast without commending so many Black students, faculty, staff that have done so much work alongside me, before me, and will after me. And that is all she wrote. Thank you all for taking the time to tune into the first podcast episode of the More Than a Month series for Black History Month. I'm so excited to produce more content, to pick you all's brains as I challenge us all to learn and unlearn the beautiful elements of Black history. Until then, please, please, please continue to be safe, implement self-care, and take some time to devote to learning the beautiful, 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 and did I say beautiful? History called Black history.